WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. The United States Tennis Association recently announced that the U.S. Open in New York is still on, despite yesterday canceling a handful of amateur national championship events this summer. So for tennis fans and history fans, this segment is for you and anyone else who likes a good underreported story. Before there was Billie Jean King or Althea Gibson or Serena Williams, the biggest name in women's tennis was Alice Marble. Born in 1913 to a financially insecure family in California, Alice rose from a hard-scrabble, naturally athletic player who went from hitting a tennis ball like a baseball to an incisive champion. Let's listen.
The play's the thing, says the fair Miss Alice Marble, the American champion. So here's the play. With her tall figure and her brilliant tennis, Miss Marble has been a popular favorite on the principal tennis courts of England this summer. Her kick service is considered second to none among women players, whilst her well-assorted strokes have made her a welcome and attractive match for the best of them. This Alice may not be in Wonderland, but she's certainly marvelous.
Alice won 18 major championships over the course of her career. She also throws through the ranks of high society and was a fashion plate, hobnobbing with the likes of Clark Gable, Carol Lombard, and William Randolph Hearst. There are still a lot of questions about the life of Alice Marble. She claimed that she once acted as a spy during World War II. And while we know she lived with her coach Eleanor for a few years, Alice said she was once married to a man named Joe. Although there is little evidence that's been uncovered to back up either story. But that's not for lack of trying. Author Robert Weintraub dove headfirst into the life of tennis star in his new biography, The Divine Miss Marble, A Life of Tennis Fame and Mystery. Robert, welcome to All of It.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. After that British commentator, I'm afraid my boring American accent's going to sound very mundane, but I'll do my best.
I just loved it. I couldn't stop listening to that. Alice started out as this baseball phenom, actually, when she was a kid. What was she really good at, and how did she make the spin to tennis?
She was good at everything, is the point. I mean, she was just a natural athlete, like, you know, you seldom see. She was baseball was the biggest sport, of course, in the country at the time. We're talking about the 20s and then into the 30s. And, yeah, she started for her high school team in San Francisco. She played sandlot ball. She was even a mascot for the AAA team, the San Francisco Seals, which was the biggest team in town in those days before baseball expanded west. And, she played basketball and ran track. She could do it all. But then her brother kind of intimated that tennis was much more of a lifelong sport and more a likely path out of their very, you know, very modest and almost poverty-stricken existence in San Francisco. Her father died when she was very young, and they had very little money. And she grew up playing in the Golden Gate Park courts, which were hard scrabble, cement, weather-beaten courts. And, you know, it gave her an advantage, as it turned out, when she came up against a lot of the country club bred elite tennis players who really didn't have her fortitude when it came to playing on and giving her 100% all there. And she overcame her beginnings and switched to tennis and became a champion very quickly. At age 17, she was the top rated player in California and was on her way to the top of national tennis scene when she was unfortunately stricken with tuberculosis and had to sit out for a couple of years, and overcame that to win the U.S. Nationals, what we now know as the U.S. Open. And, that was when she really became hyper famous because of her not only winning the championship, but of course, because what she overcame to do so and being totally away from the sport for 2 years and undergoing a physical fitness routine that we would consider, commonplace today, but at the time was extraordinary for a woman, especially. Everybody looked at her as this incredible success story, especially during the Depression era, as someone who overcame long odds. And she went, you know, on her, the rest of her life overcoming incredible hardships, really, and not just in tennis, but off the court as well.
One of the key influences in her career and her life was her coach, Eleanor Tennant. I'm going to read about one of their first encounters. It says, "At first, Eleanor was regretting her decision. Upon arriving in La Jolla, Alice displayed a, quote, truly shocking temper and was, quote, desperately untidy. When she first arrived, she dropped her coat on a chair and her hat in someplace else and her bag someplace else," according to Tennant, who had grown up learning that untidiness was a waste of energy and insisted she keep everything clean and orderly. Every day became a battle of wills as Eleanor tried to break down her young charge completely in order to rebuild her, while Alice struggled to retain her individuality. She wasn't a complete neophyte, after all. She'd gone from a novice on the public court to the national championships. She resisted her new mentor's instruction at every turn.
Boy.
What? How did their relationship and their working relationship evolve from there? How did they come around to having this successful working relationship?
Well, a lot of it was just as it says, Eleanor breaking Alice down sort of brick by brick. There was a lot of the kind of Eliza Doolittle relationship going on there, where Eleanor really tried to control virtually every aspect of Alice's life. And successfully, as it turned out, Alice, in time, saw that the only way really to the top was to listen to what Eleanor said. Eleanor was a lot like Alice in a lot of ways. She came from nothing in San Francisco and basically talked her way to becoming the pro at the Beverly Hills Hotel, and became the teacher for a great number of old Hollywood celebrities like Clark Gable and Carol Lombard and Errol Flynn, Marlena Dietrich, all these great names who by proxy became friends with Alice as well. And, you know, Alice kind of looked around and saw that, you know, fighting Eleanor wasn't the path to the top, but listening to what she said was. And when she made that mental switch in her mind, it became apparent to her that, you know, Eleanor knew what she was talking about. And sure enough, you know, she followed her advice on not just how best to win tennis matches, but how best to dress and talk and, you know, relate to people. And it was a highly successful operation. You know, Eleanor's great dream was to take a player much like her with this raw material and mold her into a champion, and she did just that. And Alice played the part of the puppet on the string, if you will, at first, very well. And it was only later on, as she became, you know, her own woman, and tried to get herself some financial and personal independence from Eleanor, that she really flowered as a person.
My guest is Robert Weintraub. The name of his book is The Divine Miss Marble, A Life of Tennis Fame and Mystery. So Eleanor Tennant and Alice they lived together for years. And of course, there was speculation that they were in a romantic relationship. What did Alice said about the relationship over the years? And what did your research uncover or confirm?
Well, she always denied it. They both always denied it. Certainly at the time, they had to deny it because, you know, to admit to any kind of homosexual relationship in the 30s was poison, especially for the brand building that Alice was doing at the time. Alice Marble Incorporated would not have stood another day had it been alleged, truthfully proven, that she had a lesbian affair with her coach. They were definitely in a form of love, and it seems like they had at least, you know, several intimate encounters. It was closer almost than a regular love affair. It was more of, you know, an affair, a love between two people who had the exact same goal in mind and did everything and moved mountains to make it happen. You see that in certain other aspects that, you know, the romantic aspect of it was certainly by the time Alice had gotten to the top of tennis was no longer certainly on her mind. You know, she owed Eleanor in a great many ways, including financially. I mean, Eleanor basically paid her freight for almost a decade, and she had no ability to get out from under her thumb. And Eleanor used that to, you know, to get Alice to do everything she wanted to do, including, it would appear, at least a couple of times, be a romantic partner. But it was much more interesting as a sort of love affair between two people who wanted nothing else but to achieve the ultimate goal. And they did that, and it was almost as though once they accomplished what they set out to accomplish, there was no real reason left for their love to burnish any further than that. And they had what you might call a rather dramatic, operatic is the word I believe I used, mm-hmm. breakup during the war, and the two of them went their separate ways, never really to get together again.
You mention in the book that commentators time and time again would say that Alice played like a man.
Yeah.
So beyond the sexism of that statement, what does that tell us about her playing style, and how was she perceived by her female peers, the people she played against?
Yeah. It was a compliment, believe it or not, when they said that she played like a man. You know, that really tennis was split into two eras, before Alice and after Alice, because of her prowess in playing. You know, before she took the court, female tennis was mostly a game played on the baseline with players kind of daintily hitting the back ball back and forth, wearing calf-length skirts, and, you know, not really showing much flair. And then Alice came along, and she was entirely different. First of all, she wore shorts, which was a scandal when she first broke them out. And then everybody realized, wait a minute, that's stupid not to play in shorts. Let's do it. So a lot of them followed suit after that. And, you know, there was much commentary about how Alice looked in those shorts, of course, as you can imagine, given the time and place. But she also just was astonishing in her speed and her power. I mean, she was a quantitative leap above her competition in terms of just physical prowess. And, you know, she played a serve and volley game that was really unmatchable. She still to this day is considered to have one of the best serves ever in women's tennis. And, you know, between that and her speed and her ability to chase down and hit winners from all angles, you know, there were times when she would play top flight, you know, competition, top 10 players, and just demolish them without, you know, breaking a sweat, you know, finish a match in under half an hour. So you're talking about somebody who is, just from that aspect alone, really is one of the foremost figures in tennis history, and really has been forgotten from that aspect, which is pretty unfortunate and one of the reasons why I wanted to write the book. Her competitors, you know, they admired her skill, certainly, and they liked Alice a great deal. She was that kind of person. She could blow you away on the court and then smile and laugh with you in the locker room right after. That's pretty rare. Of course, there was a certain amount of competitive jealousy, and that's mm-hmm. natural. But for the most part, she was not reviled in any particular way. She was not one of the famous, you know, John McEnroe or Jimmy Connors or name your figure from tennis history who has a reputation for bad behavior. She did things like that would be considered mulish or unsportsmanlike on occasion, but for the most part, she was very well liked and respected and had a personality that people enjoyed being around, and that went for people outside of tennis as well as inside of tennis.
She used her fame during the war, Alice Marble did, to promote physical fitness for women as part of a national fitness program under the Office of Civilian Defense. And thanks to the New York City Municipal Archives and WNYC's Director of Archives, Andy Lancet, we managed to dig up a clip of Alice promoting that program
awesome.
Here on WNYC. So let's listen.
You know, this may sound like treason to my sex, but facts will bear me out that women are less physically fit than men.
Well, if I can come in with a verbal stop volley, why is that too important?
Bob, in this present national emergency, it is to everybody's advantage to be mentally and physically fit. Not just adequately so, but in top-notch shape. Mayor LaGuardia appointed me to this position to arouse the women and girls of America to the fact that they've got to make themselves models of strength and vitality and acknowledge their new role as guardians of the home.
Well, do you mean that the women of America may have to fight for their homes?
Well, I suppose you might call it that. But I'm referring specifically to the health and physical well-being of the women and young girls, as well as men.
Okay, so there's another story about Alice Marble helping out during the war, which is one of the big mysteries. She claimed that she had been a spy, and I'm going to give a brief summary. She said she was asked to re-engage with a former lover who she claims to have documented his work with the Nazis, only then to be pursued. She was shot by a Russian double agent. That's what she says. Any evidence to back this up?
Precious little, I'm afraid. You have to consider a couple of things talking about it. First of all, it would appear that she did have a flying boyfriend and during the war, a pilot who was not killed in action and wound up having the same initials as the guy that she claimed was her husband who was shot down. So there was an element of truth to it. And there was also a fact that one of the people who I tracked down who actually knew her Now, I had to write this book a little bit more of a detective story and insert myself more into it than I ordinarily would have because of these kind of things, that there's not a lot of sourced material that proves her story or disproves it, really. It's all sort of in the ether. And one of the people I talked to said that most likely what the truth was that she did have an affair, but with a Nazi, an actual Nazi, person in Germany or Austria, who, subsequently, was killed during the war, or perhaps was still alive even after the war. And that's why she kind of made up a story all the way around it that was so extraordinary as to be kind of laughable. But what she was doing was trying to hide the real truth and protect the identity of other people who, she may not have wanted to name. That's part of it. And I think there's also a part of her story, she was never paid for all her tennis greatness. She came up in the amateur era. And despite the fact that she was hanging out with movie stars and titans of industry like William Randolph Hearst and the DuPont family and various other jet setters, she didn't have enough money for most of that period to even open up her own bank account. So, she was always sort of living her life kind of semi-fulfilled. She accomplished great things, but financially, certainly, she was not remunerated as such. And then, after the war, she was kind of forgotten. It's sort of the nature of sports. The next champion comes along, and then the next champion. And, by the 60s, it was like, oh, Alice Marble. I vaguely remember that name. Didn't she used to be a tennis player? The war cut off.
I was going to tell people that they can look.
A great career.
Yeah, they can learn so much more about her in the book, The Divine Miss Marble, A Life of Tennis Fame and Mystery by Robert Weintraub. Robert, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. I appreciate it so much. Thanks, Alice.